Unibet. Episode 74. Andrew Sarauer, Stürmer, Hydrophäe Havar, AV19.
I think this will be huge for the guys down the road, learning and taking things away from this series and seeing what it takes now. It's takes 20, 25 guys buying in and guys finding roles and getting chemistry in your locker room, and it'll be only looking up from here.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich. Und der Hexenkessel kocht. Da bleibt kein Moment, um einmal durchzuatmen. Bring it on. Mit dem Shorthander abgefälscht und die Scheibe im Tor. Aus dem Nichts. Wie schön war das gemacht.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock. After an incredible finals run, it's only due that or overdue that we get this man on. He's been a cornerstone for the organization of Hydrophäe Havar AV19 for many, many years now. He just concluded his ninth year in the league, as stated, an incredible finals run, and I just had to bring him on. So thankful that none other than Andrew Sarauer is now on the Unibet Hockey O'Clock line. Andrew, thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Andrew, we're recording this conversation a day after potentially a finals game number 7 could have happened. Now that the finals concluded in, for us neutral fans, in only 4 games, how bummed out are you still with more than a week to ponder now that the finals didn't go to full length?
Yeah, it still hasn't really fully sunk in that it's over. We had such a good run there, and for this season to finish in 4 games in the finals was just crazy because those games were so close and so tight, and it just felt like such a close series, and see them celebrate on our ice after 4 straight wins and sweeping the playoffs, which is crazy. It was hard for our guys and for the team to watch that. And I mean, they had a good team and they fully deserved everything they had, but I mean, our guys pushed hard right to the end, and I was extremely proud of the guys and the team and the way they competed right to the end. But seeing them celebrate in 4 games was definitely a little hard.
I want to dissect Hydrophäe Havar's season with you in much more detail, but I want to start with a fairly general question. And you're someone who a lot of people on this podcast already know or got to know, because at the very start of the season, you sent in a couple of snippets talking about training camp, talking about Kevin Constantine and everything that he brought to the table. But if I had told you in training camp that you would end up making the top 6 easily, that you would end up with one of the coveted tickets for the Champions Hockey League, and if you would end up with the finals run, what would you have answered me?
Well, that's a good question. I think we've had the last couple of years the mentality of being in the top 6 every year here now, and we're always kind of ready to take that quote-unquote next step was our slogan. And right from day one, when Kevin kind of stepped in, you could kind of tell things were a little bit different. He just kind of had that presence and ability to teach. And we had a long training camp as far as like video sessions and meetings. And he kind of has a really, really good ability to teach his system. And once guys learned the way he wanted to teach and coach, guys bought in and really respected the way he brought his system in. And it wasn't anything crazy. It was just little things like blocking shots and sticks and lanes and talking on the ice and your routes at the net in the corners. So all those little things just kind of added up. And over time, you could kind of see the way that our team was developing into a winning team. And we started the season 5-0, and it was just kind of like, holy, this might be for real. Like we had such a deep team with great Hungarians this year and great imports, and everything just kind of gelled together. So once we had that belief throughout the year, we started gelling at the right time. And I don't want to say like Champions League or all this, because that was a little bit extra, but I mean, we were ready this year. We were ready to take that next step, and guys did, and it was a fun year.
Now, I vividly remember, not only because I had a long conversation on Unibet Hockey O'Clock with him as well, the anti-Kahula era, and also the fallout with him not being brought back, even though a contract extension kind of had already been announced. So a little bit of turmoil there. And if you talk to people who were on that team, they said maybe, and it's not judgmental, just quoting those people, they said maybe a lack of defensive structure led to the way the season ended last year with a clean sweep at the hands of Vienna. How much of that sentiment would you share, and how much did Kevin Constantine indeed work on the defensive structure, quote unquote?
Yeah, the way we call him Oopy, I guess, is Antti Kahula's name. Oopy, he had a different style of coaching, and he did a lot of good things for our team. I don't want to make it seem like he was a bad coach or a bad person. Like he let the guys run, and that's kind of how our team was. We were up and down, and he really believed in scoring goals is going to beat teams. And so we just kind of were just missing a little bit of that structure and that defensive, I guess, hockey. And that's what Kevin really drilled into us. So it was kind of like night and day from last year to this year. But Oopy was a stand-up guy. Like he really let the guys play a fun style of hockey. And we just ran into a really good goaltender. We couldn't score against Vienna. The Stark bomb, he stood on his head, and we just couldn't score in the playoffs. And we had this high offensive team all year, and then once we got to the playoffs, we just couldn't score. And then that's what killed us in the end.
Now, you're someone who's seen a lot of hockey, who's played on a ton of teams, who's basically been everywhere. And just you personally, without the new coach being named yet, what were your conclusions? What things did you take away from last year where you thought, okay, we need to get better at this? You already mentioned that you were a great offensive team. You've got a ton of scorers, and it's a fun team to watch. But was it just, quote unquote, the defense that needed to get better, the all-around package, something else?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of everything. I think we kind of had that main core together, and we just needed to find that missing piece. And we brought in some guys this year that really, really bought into what Kevin was teaching, and we didn't make much for changes all year. Our team stuck together, and it's hard to really pinpoint what you need at the end of the year. You always think, hey, we need a little bit meaner, tougher team here, and need a little bit of scoring, but you never really know until you get your new guys in and your new team. And this year we just kind of seemed to click, and guys found roles, which is important. And that goes from Hungarians to imports, and our lines just kind of gelled together. And that's what I think was big. We were much deeper this year as far as all four lines were playing. And Kevin's a coach that rolls four lines, and he wants guys bringing energy and playing that hard style of hockey, grinding and wearing teams down, because that's what wins games in the playoffs. And another big thing is we stayed healthy this year, and that's what kind of you need all year is being healthy and playing your best style of hockey right at the end of the year. And I think that's what helped us a lot this year.
Because you were mentioning all the new guys that were on the team, guys like Braden Shaw, guys like Colin Jacobs, guys like István Terboch, guys like Josh Atkinson, Christian Fournier. Who was maybe the one player, and I know that the teammates hate singling out individuals, but if you dare me to still ask a question, who was the one new player on the team that kind of caught your attention first?
Well, probably Atkinson, just the way he came in, and he's a guy that just can take over a game on his own. Like his power and his speed is just unbelievable. Like he's a defenseman, and he'll be the first guy to dump the puck in on a PK, and he'll go get it, and he'll just beat the other guys back. Like he doesn't care. He's kind of got that attitude where he'll go do things on his own, and you're just like, holy, he can take over a game. And I've never seen a defenseman get so many breakaways in my life. But so he was a big surprise for us this year. I thought Shazi was huge for us down the stretch, and in the playoffs, he was scoring goals, and he kind of had a slow start, but he was kind of playing a third line role on our team. And once he put him up with the top line, he was using his size, and he was finding the back of the net. And another big guy for us, I thought this year, was Balint Magosi. He's a Hungarian guy I played with him earlier in Faribault years ago, and he came back this year. He's a hometown guy, just all around guy for our locker room, older Hungarian guy, play up and down your lineup. First line, he was on Hari's line for a while, and then he was in fourth line in the playoffs, but just a great leader and a good guy for the younger Hungarians to look up to, and he'll kind of do quote unquote anything it takes for the playoffs, blocking shots and just being an all around guy. And so he was a big pickup for us coming back home this year for sure.
Let's remain with Josh Atkinson a little bit, and we've already talked about it on our broadcast that it's probably going to be incredibly hard to keep him, because a lot of bigger organizations have had an eye on him for quite some time. Him coming in and bringing so much energy to the table, you being kind of the old dog on the team, and I hate to give away your age, but you're 37 years young, and obviously the oldest member of Heidefeyervar's team. How much did you hate going against such a high energy player in practice, and how much did you cherish it that you had this high energy player on your own team when playing in competitive games?
Yeah, it's just crazy how, like, he's just one of those players who can, he'll say something in the locker room in the intermission or on the game in the ice, and you're just like, daddy, we can't do that. Like, he just wants to like hold on to the puck, and he's like saying all these things, and our guys are just like shaking their head, and they're just like, no, we don't see that, or we can't do that kind of stuff that you see or do. Like, we can't just go expose the puck. And so he's got that kind of mentality. But he, as far as like his first year in Europe, like he came over here and he just tore it up, and many games he's just like, he'd take the puck and go end to end and score, and it's just like, well, there's a free goal, like we didn't even expect that kind of thing, and it just changes the game. And so he's just a freak. Like, he's in the gym, he can jump and lift as much as anyone, and like his skating is just like his power. I've never seen anything like it as far as like just end to end. And he had a great year, and I have no idea what his plans are as far as staying in the league on our team or moving up. I guess we'll see, wait and see. But he had a great year and definitely well deserved.
You were mentioning the depth. You were mentioning individuals that brought a lot to the program. You were mentioning the different style that Kevin Constantine used to teach, to make you block more shots, to have a stick in the lane. Was there ever a point, and you mentioned that 5-game winning streak at the start of the season, where you started to believe is probably a little bit too heavy, but where you thought, well, this could be something special here. Something special might be brewing here.
Yeah, I think guys at the start of training camp were just like, whoa, this is a lot. Like, it was almost like you were at a hockey school or like a coach's seminar. Every single morning we were in the VIP room watching video. We'd grab a coffee and head up there, and we'd have to take notes. We'd all have booklets, and it was like, I'm a hockey guy, so I didn't mind it. It's kind of nice waking up and going to like a PowerPoint presentation every morning. But and then he'd call you in after practice and go over your shifts from the preseason. I think we watched the same preseason game highlights at least 10 times, because we played one preseason game and then we had 2 weeks off or something like that. So it was a lot, but like, he just little things. It's just crazy how like just your miss a hit or your shot block, and he'd call you in and say like, that's not good enough. And by the end, guys just kind of learn the way he wants to teach, and he's not being rude about it. Like, he's coaching and he's just such a good like teacher. He's meant to teach. Like, he can speak in front of the room and like his voice just carries. And like, but what I see in Kevin is his ability to break a game down, like his video. Like, he doesn't just watch the game once or twice. Like, he watches it all day, and like his stats, like, he's kind of like an analytics coach before analytics came popular. Like, we'd have 20, 30 different stats posted after every game, and he's just focuses, and he'll go back and break down our starts from 10 games ago to this 10 games, our penalties, our shift lengths. Like, it's like he breaks everything down, puts it in charts, and he'll explain you're missing hits here, you're missing block shots here, he calls it dirt play and all this other stuff. And so it's impressive how much he can dial a game in and break it down on video.
Obviously, Kevin Constantine guested on this podcast a couple of weeks ago as well, and it's fairly obvious where he's coming from, because a good friend of his, Troy Ward, excelled at times in this league as well, and they've both got a huge analytics background. Now, you being that proven scoring commodity, basically each and every year you've been in Fiala with maybe one dip down and couple of better scoring years than others. How did his approach not help your scoring, because it wasn't up with up to previous years, but how did his analytics approach and everything that he pointed out help your game, help shape your game?
Yeah, I think obviously I had a little bit lower of a role this season and the last couple of seasons, but he played me a lot. I started a little bit lower in the lineup at the start of the year. I had a small injury in the preseason, but once the season got going and we missed Hari and Bartz for a couple months there during the year, and I was able to play up on the top line, he let me run like with the guys, and I think I gained that respect a little bit, and I was playing on the PK and PP with him, and he helped me a lot in different ways, and it kind of like brought me a new energy towards the end of my career here. It's, you learn different things from different coaches, and I really respected the way he approached different things. Like, he didn't come in and say a lot in intermissions before games. He just kind of lets the leaders, lets the older guys handle the room, and his job is to run the bench, and then he'll break it down after the next day of practice and in video. So I kind of really respected that, and like, his practices are short and a lot of it's the same drills every day. So he really focuses on repetition and lets the guys play.
Something interesting that you mentioned, and it's always nice to take listeners inside the locker room and how everything is handled there. You said he lets the leaders of the team do a lot of work. You've already named Balint Magoji, one of the veterans on the team. Who was doing that work pregame or during intermission?
I think it's just collectively. Like, we had guys that have, like, Patan's played in the league for a while, Campbell's played in the league for a while, obviously Magoji, and then Hari was our captain. So anytime that there needed to be something to say, I think it was said. And obviously I've been there the longest, but I'm not a big rah-rah guy either. So I think it was just a big collective group. And anytime something needed to be said, whether it was the goalie, guys on defense, forwards, guys would step up, and everyone kind of knows in a locker room when something's not going right. So guys stepped up at different times in the year, and our leadership, I think, was great this year as far as leading the team when something needed to be said, and Kevin kind of just stepped back as far as that part of things and let the guys handle things, and I think it was good.
You said you're not a big rah-rah guy. Then again, you're one of the most respected imports in the entire league, one of the longest tenured imports as well. Was there ever a point during the season where you felt the need, the urge to stand up and talk to the room because things were A, going well, or probably B, not going so well?
Nothing really comes to mind. I can't think of anything right offhand, but if there was something you said, I would definitely say it. But I try to lead like little things, different things as far as being a good pro, showing up on time, being in the gym, working hard in practice. Those kind of things I think are things that go a little bit longer. Like everyone can talk in the room and everyone can yell and scream, but I think leadership is more than just being a talker. Like you have to go out there and put in the work, be on time, be good to the young guys, and, you know, go out for dinner, plan parties, play music. You know, it's a lot that goes into being a leadership, and I learned from a lot of guys before me. So I'm just trying to show guys what it takes to be a good pro and not necessarily just yell and scream and tell guys what to do in the locker room.
It's interesting that you mentioned your role as regards being a leader. And it's funny how hockey lives evolve, because first you start out looking up to other players, hope that they teach you a little bit or show you the most important things that you need for a long career. At what point with Fiaba, maybe even this year, did you realize, oh shit, there are a lot of players looking up to me? Or was there never this point of realization where you thought, okay, now I have to be the leader, now I am looked as the leader?
Yeah, I think that kind of took over a couple of years ago. Once you're the older guy on the team and I've been around for a few years, you kind of just develop into that leader on the team, I guess. So I hope some of these guys look up to me. I just try to go do my thing every day. I'm all about doing the same thing, warming up, and hopefully these guys take something out of it. If they do, great. If not, that's great too. So I learned a lot from guys like Frank Bannum and older guys that were here, just guys that carried themselves the right way. Mike Uzis, great professionals, you know. So hopefully these guys see a little bit of that. And I mean, that's the way I was taught, and that's the way hopefully I can teach someone someday.
And there are some huge organization icons like Christian Palkovic and Chaba Kovac, whom we've had in an interview during finals game number 4. And he told us a lot about the culture in Fiava and how this finals run helped really put this hockey program like on a map for a lot of, especially Austrian fans. If you reminisce about the way this program has evolved from your first year to this year, from creating an offensive powerhouse to finally having that all-around game with great goaltending that you probably need for deep playoff runs, from not being able to winning playoff series or a playoff series to winning multiple ones in the same year and ending up in the finals. How do you look back on these past 9 years in the league and past eight of them with Hydro Fiaba AV19?
Yeah, this year was special, obviously, making the finals, because it's been a grind here. We've always kind of been that lower level team my first couple of years in the league, just scratching the playoffs, getting in through the bottom pick round. And then last couple of years, we've been known as a top six team. And like I said earlier, taking that next step. And this finals run was crazy because the fans were just all over us at the end of the year, just like saying thank you and congratulations, congratulations. And it's like hard saying thank you because we finished second, like we didn't even win. And so they were throwing parties for us and all that. So it was a little bit kind of different, but the fans deserved it, obviously, for so long. And the city just got behind us. And everyone, it was such a cool feeling in the city because we've always kind of been that lower level team. And now we we were ready to make a run, and guys believed, and it was fun seeing the city and the club rally around us and make that run.
You're getting into the top six. You're picking Pustertal and you're sweeping them. And it's the first playoff series win in franchise and organizational history. At what point did that bus start going around in the city? And you mentioned the fans and how thankful they were. Obviously on Fejervár's Instagram account, it's at FejervárAV19. A lot of great pictures from a great season ending party at the main square can be looked at and were posted. But at what point did that buzz really start? Was it always there, or was there a point where you thought, okay, well, this feels different?
No, this one definitely felt a little bit different. Like we knew we were ready to make a run in the playoffs this year, like finishing third, and we were close to second all year. And so this was the first time we got to actually pick a team this year. And obviously it wasn't, there's only between a couple teams, but we felt confident this year that we can do something. Like Klagenfurt and then Vienna's, like they were a little bit lower down. And so once we got rolling against Pustertal, man, it was fun to watch like our team just gel, and like goals were coming easy for us, and we kind of really didn't hit any adversity till like the finals. We lost one game to Bielak in the second round, game one in overtime. But other than that, we went 8-1 all the way to the finals. So we didn't face much adversity. We like the way we were scoring against Pustertal, it was just like incredible. It didn't even really seem like playoff hockey, and guys were just rolling at the right time. And then we ran into a hot goalie in the finals. So yeah, it's just the buzz, the excitement was just fun to see all year, and it was a lot of fun.
You said it right there. You were in the unenviable position to pick a team first, and I mean, we've had that many, many times, and obviously narratives evolve around it. Oh, okay, this team picked that team because they think they might have a good shot at beating them, so that team could use that as a motivational tool to make sure that this doesn't happen. So there's a lot of things that go into this, but you had your choice in between two teams, Pustertal and Klagenfurt. A Klagenfurt team that you just had beat 7-0 at their place a couple weeks earlier. How did you decide that you wouldn't want to face Klagenfurt, but Pustertal instead, with a longer travel, considerably longer travel, also involved?
Well, obviously Klagenfurt, with the history, winning the last couple of years, and they were a little bit banged up. I mean, the game we beat them 7-0, I don't even know if they had, I think they must have been missing 7 or 8 guys, and Dom, I believe, was still away. So they were a big no, I think, for us, and that just left Pustertal. And the travel is the travel. It's hard, but it's both teams have to do it. And I just felt more confident in my eyes playing Pustertal than Klagenfurt, but the coaches let us vote, and I don't even know what the final results were, but they all let us vote, and between all the teams, and whoever was left with the highest percentage we were going to take, and that ended up being them. So it turned out to be a good matchup for us. I didn't think it would go 4. I thought it'd be a long series as well, because they had a unbelievable run at the end of the year, and they were a solid team, but fortunately we found a way to beat their goalie, and guys were scoring like crazy, and that was huge.
You just mentioned it, that 8-1 to start the postseason, especially after a layoff of almost 10 days. How important retrospectively was this scoring outburst to start the postseason?
Yeah, that was wild. Starting at home was huge. We knew they were going to come hard, and they were an offensive team as well, but they had one of the best goalies all year. So we knew we were just going to have to grind them down and find ways to beat him with traffic and rebounds and stuff like that. But once we got one or two, it just kind of the floodgates open in that game. And guys didn't look back. We went down there and won game two as well. And it was kind of just one of those series where we got timely goals from different guys all throughout the lineup. And that's what you need to win playoff series, different guys stepping up. And we found a way to put them away in four, which is huge, because once you let a team back in the series with anything, with one little game or goal, it can shift the momentum in the series quickly.
Now, something interesting had to develop over the time, and I want to get down to the nitty-gritty with you. And it's also something that our good friends at Unibet have realized and worked out. The statisticians said or showed a dramatic improvement in your penalty killing over the entirety of the regular season. It's set at 75%, which is league rank 12 out of 14, depending on how you see the Bratislava situation, 13 teams. And then it indeed skyrocketed to an 85.3% during the playoffs, a 10% increase, especially considering that you're playing the best teams in the entire league, the best defensive team with Villach, and you're improving your penalty kill by 10%. What did happen in between the regular season and the postseason in that regard?
I don't know if much changed. I think guys just stepping up, like the way Kevin teaches our PK, it's like block shots, defensemen, forwards, like make sure you're in lanes. And then obviously our goalie was unreal down the stretch and in the playoffs. So our PK is just like very tactical. Like he makes sure your sticks are in the right lanes. Our forecheck is very, very strict. And he doesn't let guys forecheck in the other end. So like he makes sure guys are in the right spots at all time. And once we get into our zone, it's pressure. And I think guys stepped up big for each other and blocking shots and just finding a way to get pucks out of our end and get the job done, because PK is all about battling and competing and sucking it up and doing just kind of whatever it takes. And our defensemen, man, I give them a lot of credit. Like they were eating pucks and just laying it on the line, and they did an unbelievable job for us.
How difficult was it for you personally? Because if you talk to people, a lot of them says it's all about staying in some kind of rhythm. Now the regular season ends, there's a 9-day period where you don't have competitive games. Then you finish your quarterfinal series in four games. You get another week off while other teams are still playing for the semis. And then you have to start, quote unquote, cold into a semifinal series against a team that just went the full distance. How difficult was that game one in Villach?
Yeah, that was a different approach being off for that long. You never really know if it's good to have the rest or if it's good to ride the wave. And D-Lock was coming off that crazy series with Ljubljana, 7 games and all those goals. And we're just sitting here waiting to see what's going to happen. So once we knew it was V-Lock, we were like, hey, let's get to work. Let's ramp it up here, boys. And honestly, that game won when we went to V-Lock. That was maybe our best start of the playoffs. We got 2 goals in the first like 3 minutes and we were on fire and we just couldn't get that next goal. And then they got one and then the game was 2-1. They tied it like, and then the overtime. So honestly, we played really good that game one. We didn't get the win, but guys knew like, hey, this is a game we should have had. And we came home and then we took control. But being off for 9 or 10 days, we kind of went in little segments. We'd go a couple days off and guys took care of their bodies, did whatever they needed. And once we were ready and we knew it was V-Log, we knew it was go time and we were ready.
It's It's interesting that he mentioned this 2-0 lead during game one. Obviously, and that's also something that the Unibet stats show, you created a little bit of league history because it's the fastest 2-0 lead to start a game with only 2 minutes and 21 seconds into it. So there's that. But an interesting thing that Kevin Constantine mentioned before the series, he said, obviously, a well-rested team might have problems or run into problems at the start of the series, but then a well-rested team will take over the rest of the series if it's a long one compared to a team that just had to get through a grueling 7-game series. Was that the sentiment within the team as well, that the longer the series goes, the more advantageous it would be for Hydro Fever AV19?
I think so. We were healthy, which, like I said earlier, was huge for us. And Bielak ran into some major injuries and they had some sicknesses as well. So we were ready to go the distance. Our guys were ready to go. Once we lost game one, we were coming home with the attitude, okay, let's go. We need to win game two at home. And we did. And so the big momentum game was game three, going back there and winning that game, because game one, losing that game was hard, but you got to win on the road. We didn't have home ice in that series. So we just said, hey, if we're going to win the series, we got to win one on the road eventually. So let's make game three this game. And that's what the guys focused on. And we did a great job coming out with another solid game in that series. So we felt confident in our team. We were healthy. I know Bielak ran into a lot of injuries and it was unfortunate for them, but it was a solid series. I think they competed right to the end and they left, they gave it all they had, but eventually our team took over and health was a major factor in that.
Because health is such a big factor, not only during the regular season, but especially during the postseason. And obviously Vienna was decimated by COVID considerably during game seven in the Klagenfurt series, during the first couple of games with Red Bull Salzburg in the other semifinal. Obviously, a couple of players returned, but just coming off of the virus infection. How big a threat, at the very least, in the back of your head, was that COVID topic? Or did you personally try to block it out as well as possible?
Yeah, obviously it's still in the back of your head. And it was a little bit scary seeing that Vienna was going through that, because you kind of always think, for us this year, we had guys kind of get it in two or three guys per time, every other week it almost seemed. And the year before it was like half the team and then half the team later. And then this year it was three guys now, like spread out. So once we got through most of the team this year, it was starting to creep back in our minds a little bit with Vienna. And like, you just don't ever want to see that go down on a hockey team, getting a sickness or something like that to kill your team in the playoffs, especially when you've worked so hard all year to get to the spot you're at. So that was just unfortunate for Vienna, but guys, our team, I stuck together and we're very lucky that nothing happened to us in the playoffs.
Now that we're talking about Vienna and a couple of other series and everything that happened there, how closely did you, during your own playoffs run, follow other series? Was it just watching the highlights? Was it taken in live games when you had the opportunity to do so? Or did you try to get some real private life away from hockey when you had days off?
No, I was following most of the series for sure. Just kind of checking online. And then once the Vlog Ljubljana series was taking place, we watched the game seven there. And man, those games, those highlights were crazy. The goals that were scored in that series was wild. But no, I followed the league pretty close, and the guys talk about it a lot in the locker room, and we're always trying to figure out like, hey, who's gonna win this, or who do you think is gonna pick who? And so we kind of make little like comments in the room, and once game seven hit there, we watched that game and followed most of the series online.
You've already mentioned that Kevin Constantine is probably second bar none, or second, not in competition with a lot of people as regards breaking the game down. When you and some of the other players on a team watch a game seven, like Fila against Ljubljana, do you just try to enjoy the game, or do you watch for specific things that you might be able to eventually apply yourselves that you're kind of storing in the back of your head for a potential use during a long series?
I think it's definitely different when you're asking a player and a coach. As a player, you're just watching the game, trying to see either maybe a little bit of the style they play or who's on the power play. But as a coach, I'm sure he watched it many times and he was breaking down each player and each system. So as a player, you just kind of watch the game and watch the highlights and don't break down too much. But I'm sure Kevin was watching those games and making many notes.
We've had the distinct pleasure of going to Fehava during semifinals 2 against Villach. We've had the distinct pleasure on Pulse 24 to broadcast game 5 in Villach, which eventually sent you to the finals. A couple of interesting things that happened during that game. Obviously, an altercation between Kevin Moderer and Josh Atkinson that got him a game misconduct. And Josh Atkinson, at the very least, in my view, showed during the finals that at times he can be a hothead. Did you personally or in the locker room ever talk about the situation that unfolded with Atkinson and Moderer that led to the game misconduct that cost you, I think, a couple of goals, or at the very least one goal, if I'm not completely mistaken? Or is that something where during playoff time you just don't talk about?
Yeah, I think he felt bad after the game. Like, he knew what happened. And I mean, they scored a goal on the power play there. But anytime something like that happens as a player, you know, he screwed up and he apologized to the boys and he kind of let it boil over a little bit. I know he wanted to get him back, but maybe it wasn't the right time. But hey, it's sometimes like he lays it on the line. Nothing needed to really be said as far as him from the players. He just came in and he apologized and then he came back to and he went to war for us the next few games. So it was over and done with.
But then again, how ambivalent was that feeling getting back on the bus, knowing for the very first time in team history you had made the finals and that you would get at the very least two home games in front of a rowdy crowd, and potentially not having Tim Campbell around because of the blade he got to his ear or close to his ear, where no one really knew if he'd be able to play?
Yeah, that wasn't like the game was unbelievable the way we clinched that game going in the finals. But it was a little bit of a damper, obviously, knowing or not knowing, I guess, what was up with Campbell. And I was on the ice when it happened, but no one saw anything. And I saw him standing in front of the net and I without a stick, and I was like handing him my stick. And then he went down and no one really knew what was up. So it was scary. Like, the guys were like, what's going on? And we were texting with our team manager. And once we found out it was his ear and he was okay, then obviously that was a big sigh of relief for the guys. And we waited for him after the game and he was able to take the bus home with us. So that was huge because he's such a warrior. And he's, man, that guy, he goes to war for the guys and just quietly goes about his business day in and day out. He doesn't miss games and he shows up and he competes. And so we needed him in the finals and that was huge for us for him to come back. But clinching the finals, that bus ride home was awesome. It's just unbelievable feeling, just knowing you're going to the finals. It's just crazy ride, and the way it all happened was unreal.
Tim Campbell just shows that hockey players are indeed the toughest probably in all of sports. You going back, you preparing for the finals, you knowing that hockey is now taken over Sekish Fehava, how did you try to mentally prepare what was awaiting in those, as it turned out, four games?
Yeah, we were just trying to roll the next series into the finals. We really had a belief that we can beat Salzburg. I mean, I thought we matched up well against them, and those games were so, so tight. And game one was just crazy, the chances, both sides. I mean, obviously, we had our chances and they had their chances. And then 3-on-3, it's like, who knows what's going to happen. And so it sucked losing game one, but game two, we came home and it was a little bit high scoring game. And that was a heartbreaker, them scoring late. But the big one was game three. I think we had such a good start to that game as well. And we got leads in most of the games in the series, but we just couldn't get that next goal to kind of put the team away. And we just, I think I told you before the game, is if we win this game, it's 2-1 coming back to our rink. And then now we have a series. And that was the game that really hurt us. Like being down 3-0, we still had a belief. And obviously game four, we played unbelievable too. But if we come back 2-1 home, oh man, that would have been crazy. But yeah, they were such close games. And that's what the finals is. It's just one little momentum swing and one little goal or penalty or momentum shift is just huge, and we just couldn't get that next goal in most of those games.
A couple of specific situations that I want to work out, and the first one brings us back to game number one after the conclusion of first overtime. Some players on Salzburg, not going to give away names, didn't know that the second period in a non-elimination game, the second overtime period, pardon me, would be played 3-on-3. Did you know, or did that come as a surprise to a couple of team members on FIFA as well?
No, I knew it was a rule, but some of the guys were saying, oh, it's not in the finals. And I double-checked with both officials on the ice before heading into the locker room, and they said, yes, it is. So we still had the conversation in the locker room, and I said, I asked the refs. So we figured it out, but some of the guys didn't believe it, but yeah, once we knew, it was kind of different, because how do you prepare for a 3-on-3 in overtime in the finals? You don't really know how to. So I think it was just a...
We've had huge arguments on the air as well. Daniel Welser, one of our experts, said he hated the rule. At the same time, we had Anton Bernhard, former Bolzano captain, as an expert on for the very first time. And Bolzano was the case in point that this rule was amended, because they played on a Friday night a game that went to the seventh period, and then they had to play an early Sunday afternoon game. And obviously the Department of Player Safety just wanted to prevent injury. But you personally, would you have preferred to go on 5-on-5 endless in a sudden victory overtime? Or do you like the 3-on-3 rule after overtime number one?
Yeah, I think in the finals especially, let the guys play 5-on-5. If we win that game, then we're like, oh yeah, 3-on-3 is great and all, but man, it's hard losing a game 3-on-3. It's just, you know, it doesn't seem like it should be the way playoff hockey is played. It's just, so I know those games go late at 7:45, and we're playing at home, and it's not a short drive 2 days later. So it was late by the time we did get home that night. So if it does go two or three overtimes, who knows? But maybe it's a situation where you play kind of the 2-2, 1-1-1 games as far as two home games in Salzburg, and then bring it back for 3-on-4 in Fehrbach or something like that, kind of would make things a little bit easier. But I just think 5-on-5 is the way playoff hockey is played, and who needs to rush? Like, who doesn't want to watch that hockey 5-on-5? Who cares if it goes two or three overtimes? It's just great hockey. It's the finals. It's the two best teams playing and competing and laying it on the line. Like, let's play all night. So it was hard, but hey, that's the rules, and the league does a great job, and maybe they'll change it someday, but it is what it is. And they got the lucky goal, or not lucky goal, but 3-on-3 goal, and that's the way it is.
I know for a fact that a couple of decision makers are regularly listening to this, and I share that sentiment. Finals and playoffs should be played 5-on-5. I do get why the rule has been amended, but it is the purest thing. Elimination games, obviously, or games in the playoffs should be coming down to a decision with 5-on-5 on the ice. But we can't dwell on that one. What I'd much rather talk, and I knew why I brought my decibel meter, my sound level meter with me to Fiava. That game number two, and I've been covering the league for 11 years now, or 10 out of the past 11 years, and it was my very first time in Fiava. I was so much looking forward to it. I heard so many great things about the fans and the place and the atmosphere, and it finally happened, and we're standing directly above the rowdy fans on the main stands. How did that atmosphere, and coming from someone like you who've played many, many games at that place, how did that atmosphere, that anticipation, that buzz, that feel right before game two differentiate from all the other games that you were on the ice?
Oh, big time. Like walking out for warmups, it's like sold out already. You can just feel that energy. Like, we're in the finals, and man, it was just crazy to play in front of them. And it is my whole career here been that atmosphere where it's like tough place to come in and play against other teams. And they just picked it up a whole nother level in the playoffs and then into the finals, just the buzz around that rink. And we feed off them a lot of times. And you can see in the finals there when Salzburg won, they were still on the ice cheering for us. Like, you don't see that too often. So they did a great job, and we feed off them a lot during the season. And then in the playoffs, they just picked it up to a whole another level, and it was just unbelievable to play in front of.
We've already talked about a couple of turning points or eventual turning points in a series. Overtime game one, coin flip, could have gone both ways. Game two, again, very close with a fluky goal by Brian Lebler that turned out to be the game winner. Game three, again, tied after 55 minutes and a game winner by Yevonen. You heading back home for that all-important first elimination game and coming out blasting during that first period. Was that the game plan to as much pressure as possible on Salzburg and skate as hard as you've never skated the entire year?
Totally. Guys just still believe, and like, we knew we could beat that team, and we're just like, it starts with one game. Let's go win one game and see what happens. And getting that lead again, place was rocking. Just fun to play in. And like, so that whole first period, man, Magosi scored, and then Magosi hit a post, I think, 5 minutes later. And again, we just couldn't get that second goal, and we just couldn't kind of take control. And all credit to Salzburg. That's what good teams do. Like, they hang around, and they played a good road game. And then once they made it 1-1, the end of the first period, that's kind of the heartbreaker for that game, because it felt like a period that we should be up a bit, but Salzburg just hung around, and they did the whole series. They played solid against us, and they limited our chances. But that game, we were buzzing, and it just hurt not getting a win in front of our home crowd, because they deserved it. And it would have been nice to at least get one win at home, but that's the way it goes. And Salzburg deserved everything.
It's interesting. Our takeaways are almost exactly the same. Even we on our show discussed that this fan, the city, really deserves having at very least one more game in the finals. And as the sold-out away stands in Game 3 in Salzburg showed, this is also a well-traveling fan base. So they at very least, the away fans would have deserved it. Maybe you would have packed the arena for a Game 6. But this first period, apart from the fact that it's one of the best periods in all of hockey that I've watched in a very long time, Kevin Constantine looked back on it and said, we should have been up by more goals, or we should have been up, shouldn't have been tied. And then not fatigue set in, but with Rafael obviously scoring an unprecedented championship winning goal through the legs. And that feeling that Fever just couldn't match what Salzburg was doing anymore. When did that set in with you that this is probably not the game, unfortunately, and not the year for Fever to win it all? Did that feeling ever set in, or did it start slowly creeping in?
Maybe not till right at the end when they got the empty netter. Like I really believed that we were going to get a win at home, and it just didn't seem fair almost the way we didn't get a win because the series was so tight. So I don't think they took full control of the series at all. Like all those games were so down to the wire late. Game three, they scored late with my stick breaking off a face-off. They get the lucky goal game two. And then game four was just, they hung around and we couldn't put them away. So our guys, man, they competed. I was so proud of our guys and the way we handled losing and in the locker room after the game, like guys just laid it on the line. And I was so proud of that group and the way they competed and battled. Guys were injured. And so it sucked losing, but obviously making the finals, making the Champions League, it was awesome season. And I'm so grateful and proud of the guys in that room.
One last thing that I really need to talk about, where I want to pick your veteran brain. It's getting said a lot during playoff time that you can't dwell on mistakes, that you can't think about things that happen, that you have to look forward, that you have to think shift by shift. But as we're talking about everything that went down in the series against Salzburg, those tiny little things, those bounces, the puck just didn't take Fehervas ways, the multiple posts that you hit, the timely saves that you didn't get. Small mistakes, small happenings that added up and eventually led to that 4-0 series. How much do you indeed block that out, and how much do you dwell on things sometimes indeed?
Yeah, I think it's a big learning step for our guys. I think making the finals is something to be proud of, but this will be huge for these guys for down the road, like next year and the year after. Listen, like playoff hockey is so small, and like these momentum swings, you have to control the ups and downs of a playoff series, whether good or bad. And Kevin was big on that. He's got a saying, kind of 5% past, 90% now, and 5% future. And we just kind of focus on the now. We prepare a little bit, we look back a little bit, but we're focusing on now. And so you just got to kind of focus on the now. And I think this will be huge for the guys down the road, learning and taking things away from this series and seeing what it takes now. It takes 20, 25 guys buying in and guys finding roles and getting chemistry in your locker room. And it'll be only looking up from here.
Now, after the conclusion of a year, there's always a couple of loaded questions. And the one we asked Kevin Constantine in his post-game interview about his immediate future and everything else, he said, first of all, he's just now looking forward to seeing his wife, his dogs, and his kids. So that's a fair plan. Now, with 37 years of age, and you're going to eventually turn 38 in November, of course, the question needs to be asked how your personal future looks like. Is there going to be Andras Arawa in Fehervar next year, or hasn't that been set in stone yet or put to paper?
That hasn't been set yet. I'll have a meeting this week with our GM here, and we'll sit down and kind of discuss the future and what we have plans. But as far as myself, I still feel great playing. My body feels good. I still think I can play at a high level, and I try to bring anything positive to the team and whatever I can to make it successful. And I try to get better each and every year. And I really still do feel good waking up, and I enjoy the process of going to the rink and the training and the preparation that goes into it. So until I lose that motivation and that drive, that's probably when you know it's the end. But it's still fun for me, and so hopefully we'll see. I'm gonna meet, like I said, this week, and maybe something will get done, and we'll go from there.
Obviously, a lot of Hydrofeva AV19 fans pulling the thumbs, and of course a lot of other league fans who'd like to see you in a Feva or Ice Hockey League jersey this upcoming fall. And as you were talking about motivation, how much of a motivation is it to know that there's this new shiny arena on the horizon set to open in December 2023 in Feva, that multifunctional modern arena the town has deserved for so many years? Is that something that you try to set as your goal? I want to play there in December of 2023.
Well, it's hard to look that far. I think I just take it year by year now, obviously. So they've been talking about that rink for a while here, actually. So, but I have seen pictures. It is getting built right now. So at least there's a little bit of progress with that. But I haven't really set it as my goal to play there someday, but my goal is just year by year, obviously. And when my body feels good, I'll keep playing. But if not, that's when you know. So it would be great to play there, obviously. But man, playing in this rink here, it doesn't get really much better than that. Like, you're playing in front of these fans, you're probably going to lose that atmosphere. And we have a great locker room in our rink here. We have a great gym. We have kind of everything you need. So I love playing in the rink we're in. It's close to downtown. It's got everything you need. So it'll be nice, though. I'm excited to see what happens with this new rink and if we can sell it out and what kind of atmosphere moves onto that new one.
You know what? I'll make sure that they put you on the board where all the plannings for gyms, locker rooms, etc. is happening, because you've seen your fair share of locker rooms. And yes, it was unfair to look ahead that far. First of all, I'm wishing you a great summer, great negotiations with Viktor Selig, and I'm so thankful that you took more than an hour out of your value time to be on Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Looking forward to seeing you this fall.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
Unibet Hockey. Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.